Welcome to PJEFC's Pulpit Ministry, a ministry that is committed to the preaching of the Word to transform lives.
I would like to just say a hi and a welcome to the Myanmar Refugee Kepong Church and Udu Kepong in our midst. I don't know where they are, but they are here for the charity bazaar. They are all sitting at the back. Please take time to get to know them. And just a note, the bazaar starts after service. Today, prayer, we realized those who are supposed to be in prayer, they were all busy buying stuff. And some of you were very upset because you didn't get to buy, so you choked stuff. And some of you are sitting at the back because that's the place that you can go immediately out, right? Sellers, please take note, those who are the first who come out, don't sell to them first. Do you smell biryani in the house of God? It's really difficult to preach when you have the food smell in the sanctuary. But just want to welcome them and please contribute whatever you can later on after service. It starts immediately after service and not before. Now, last week, Pastor Yu-Yong brought us through three festivals the Israelites celebrated: the Passover, the Festival of Weeks, and the Festival of Tabernacles. As they observe these festivals, they're supposed to do the 3 R: to help us rely on God, to ignite a kind of remembrance of what God has done for us, and to inspire us to rejoice in all things God has given me. Today, we will be seeing another three situations for the Israelites to observe, to take note for. Not festivals to rejoice, but three kinds of offenses or offenders: a murderer, a thief, and a false witness. And how should the people of God deal with such offenses should they occur in their midst? This passage is almost like a follow-up of what Elder Yifeng has preached on the Ten Commandments last month. Most of you will most probably remember this sermon because that's the only time we allow any speaker to give us 10-point sermon. And there he mentioned that as a covenant people, we must not kill, steal, or bear false witness against our neighbors. The 6th, 8th, and 9th commandment. These general commandments are now applied as legal procedure to three specific situations we're going to look at with a single intention. And that intention is to protect the vulnerable or the innocent in our midst. And in Deuteronomy 19, the vulnerable that God wants his people to protect are those that accidentally kill another, whose land is being stolen, and the one who is accused falsely. So what we will do this morning is that we will read the passage before us according to the three segments, trying to understand what they meant to the original audience, and then draw a summary of them and see how we can apply this Old Testament passage as the church, as well as individual Christian. So let's look at 19 verses 1 to 13. Follow me even as I read this passage. When the Lord your God has destroyed the nations whose land is giving you, and when you have driven them out and settled in their towns and houses, then set aside for yourselves three cities in the land the Lord your God is giving you to possess. Determine the distances involved and divide into three parts the land the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance, so that a person who kills someone may flee for refuge to one of these cities. This is the rule concerning anyone who kills a person and flees there for safety, anyone who kills a neighbor unintentionally without malice aforethought. For instance, a man may go into the forest with his neighbor to cut wood, and as he swings his axe to fell a tree, the head may fly off and hit his neighbor and kill him. That man may flee to one of these cities and save his life. Otherwise, the avenger of blood might pursue him in a rage, overtake him if the distance is too great, and kill him even though he is not deserving of death, since he did it to his neighbor without malice aforethought. This is why I command you to set aside for yourselves three cities. If the Lord your God enlarges your territory, as he promised on oath to your ancestors, and gives you the whole land he promised them, because you carefully follow all these laws I command you today, to love the Lord your God and to walk always in obedience to him, then you are to set aside three more cities. Do this so that innocent blood will not be shed in your land, which the Lord your God is giving you as your inheritance, and so that you will not be guilty of bloodshed. But if, out of hate, someone lies in wait, assaults and kills a neighbor, and then flees to one of these cities, the killer shall be sent for by the town elders, be brought back from the city, and be handed over to the avenger of blood to die. Show no pity, You must purge from Israel the guilt of shedding innocent blood so that it may go well with you. Now, maybe to some of us, you may think the killing example given in this passage is out of this world because we don't do this anymore. Go to forest, cut wood, and then the axe head fell on our friend. So maybe a more modern analogy will help us to make sense and understand what killing not on purpose means. And I give you an example from traffic accident. If I drive a car and actually want to drive forward, but accidentally put wrong gear to reverse instead and hit someone and the person dies, I may be charged with manslaughter. I did not have intent to kill at all. Understand? But if I see Pastor Melissa at the back of my car, and because she said something very terrible to me, and I hated her for it, and purposely reversed my car to finish her off, I can be charged with murder, intentional killing, even though I think it would be very hard to make a case for it, because who would believe I would do such thing to her? You all know how much I love her, and it's so near to her wedding. Two keywords for us to look at this morning in the passage, two keywords to expound are cities of refuge. One of these cities that the refugee can go to, or another word for it is asylum, where people can go to flee to escape when they accidentally kill someone. And the second keyword is the word the avenger of blood. Now, to get a better picture of the first keyword, what are cities of refuge supposed to be? Who really are welcome there? And who is the boss in these cities to really protect the innocent? For all these background passages, we by right should read the book of Numbers chapter 35 and Joshua chapter 20 as they provide additional background for our passage this morning. So homework for all of you to go back and read them. But for now, because I read them, I give you a brief overview. The first thing to say about the city of refuge is that they were part of the cities that were given to the Levites. The Levites, unlike the other tribes of Israel, did not have parcel of land to call their own, but instead they were given cities. And the Lord asked Israel to give them 48 cities. And out of the 48 cities, six of them to be designated city of refuge. When we get to Joshua 20, the cities were actually named. So you look at the slide, the map there, we know that there were three on the west side, Kadesh, Shechem, Hebron, and then as God gave them more land, they added three more on the east side of Jordan, Bezer, Ramoth, and Golan. And as you can see on the map, right, these three, six cities were actually scattered throughout the whole land that was given to Israel. And this is intentional, because if you happen to kill someone in Penang, you can flee to the designated city of refuge in Georgetown. Can you imagine if you kill someone in Penang and all the cities of refuge are in Selangor? You will have to flee all the way to one of the places in PJ. Now, this will be a problem to a lot of us, especially if you are not a good fleer or runner, like my husband, who just, by the way, completed 55-kilometer trail hike and run. I don't know why he went and torture himself like that, but he ran and he finished it in 13 hours. Okay, it sounded so great, right? Sorry, I didn't tell you I'm going to say this, but the first one of that category who reached the finish line finished it in 7 hours. I know, invite him to Alpha. By the way, side note, if you do not know, I would like to welcome you to download this app called Strava. Join the PJEFC running hiking group. This one can train you to run 55 kilometers. It's the same group of people that will be leading next Saturday's hike and hunt with Daddy. So let's be healthy together, church. Okay, I digress. Now, not only are these cities scattered through the land, but the pathway leading to these cities must have well-maintained roads and be easily accessible. Now, a commentator that I listened to expounded on this city of refuge says this. If you read Talmud, which is a group of writings, as well as a series of books written by the Jews, they say that at every crossroad of Israel, you will find a signpost with a sign on it that says, Miklat, Miklat, which means refuge, refuge. So that any of these refugee or asylum seekers needing a fair trial and protection, they will be given direction to know where that city of refuge is, so they can go there and make their way there. And once he reached there, he will appeal to the elders of a city full of Levites, and the elders have to do three things. One, they must provide refugee status to the people seeking asylum until a hearing can be conducted. Secondly, he cannot in any circumstances surrender the refugee or fugitive to the avenger of blood. And thirdly, they must hold an impartial trial. The only catch is that you cannot leave the city until the trial is conducted. After the trial, there's only two possible outcomes. Number one, if you are found guilty, you will be turned to the avenger of blood to be punished. But if you are not found guilty, or you are found not guilty, you need to stay in that city until the high priest that resides there dies. Then you are free to go back home. Then you are acquitted. It is as if the death of the high priest atoned for your crime. I would like us to hold this thought as we go along today's sermon. So essentially, the city of refuge, the whole point of having a city of refuge is to prevent vengeance done wrongly. At least, don't do it before the truth of a matter or crime is made known. The second keyword is avenger of blood. Now, it looks nothing like the slide shown here, which modern people are more accustomed to. The Hebrew word for avenger is that word goel, G-O-E-L, which is a Hebrew word for kinsman redeemer. And if you have at least read the book of Ruth, you will know what it means. The relative who is the redeemer. So the idea of the avenger of blood is that it is a relative. It's not some mafia or gangster that you hire from Cheras to kill someone. I know you all want me to say Jinjiang. Jinjiang people these days are very well-mannered and educated. And we don't do this gangster thing anymore. They are smarter now. Work in bank, the collection department. Avenger is a relative who perform a legal function. Some of the legal functions, for example, is that if someone in your family owes people money and he had to sell himself and become a slave to pay off his debts, if you are the Goel, the kinsman redeemer, you could actually redeem him and buy him back from slavery. Another example is that you could, if you happen to lose your land, the Goel could redeem the land for you. In our passage today, the Goel would be the executioner. If the person who committed the murder was found guilty in the city of refuge, he will be returned to Goel and he will execute the person. Now please bear in mind that the Israelites were living in a part of the world where blood feuds were common. You kill my brother, I must avenge and kill you. Actually, it still happened in Hong Kong. You watch all these series, right? You know, that kind of thing. So, English translation, if you watch Chinese series, you'll hear things like, if I don't avenge my brother by killing you, I will not be able to face my brother when I see him next, when I'm dead myself. And sometimes, they did this at the expense of not even stopping to consider or to find out whether the murder was done intentionally or was it pure negligence or carelessness. So that's why Moses set this rule for this kind of emergency. To ensure a case is properly heard and no more shedding of possibly innocent blood on the land that God has given them, which God says if they do it, it will pollute the land that he gave to them, and things may not go well with them. So the idea is this, that God really wants to protect the people from injustice. And that also means the flip side is true. Justice is also expected if it's premeditated killing. So if I ran over Gong Wing, and I flee to City of Refuge, and during trial found out that I ran him over on purpose, the elder of the City of Refuge must hand me over to Gong Wing's brother, who is in Singapore, or maybe the wife, if cannot find a brother, to finish me off. In that world, at that time, this is how God held his people accountable for making sure that justice is served. The sin must be dealt with, and the innocent and vulnerable is protected. The next vulnerable person to be protected is found in verse 14. It's the person who is subject to the illegal seizing of land by another. Do not move your neighbor's boundary stone set up by your predecessors in the inheritance you receive in the land the Lord your God is giving you to possess. Boundary stones, sometimes several feet tall, a marker that marks my land between my land and my neighbor's land. And then in the middle of the night, when everyone is asleep, I move it over 5 inches. So little bit, who would have noticed? My neighbors certainly will notice it. Then next week, I move 5 more inches. Eventually, week by week, if I keep doing it, I will have enlarged my own land. And what is this called? Stealing. I'm stealing from my neighbor by moving the boundary stone. I'm expanding my territory in a non-legal way. And the reason Moses gave this law was to do this, to address the problem of greed. Greedy landowners who use dirty tactics to seize land belonging to the poor, and God detests this. Now, most of the references of this sin, particular sin in the Old Testament, are directed to the strong, stealing land from the weak. Hosea, for example, said this, "The princes of Judah have become like those who move the landmark, the boundary stone. Upon them I will pour out my wrath like water." Some of you would have known this story from 1 Kings chapter 21. Jezebel found out that the husband really loved this plot of land by Naboth, the only vineyard that he has. And because he cannot win it any other way, Naboth didn't want to sell it. She stole the land, killed Naboth, and get the husband that land. He stole it, and God sent prophet Elijah to curse them for their crime. Proverbs 23:10-11 warns that God will appear on behalf of those against this crime is committed. Do not move an ancient landmark or enter the fields of the fatherless, for their redeemer is strong. He will plead their cause against you. Do not steal, or the 10th commandment that follows it. Do not covet another person's wife, house, or land. Now, a wide application of this principle is that God desires us to be content with what God has given us, and that we need to resist the urge to be greedy, to have a hold on us, that we start one thing, someone, or something that does not and may never belong to us. God detests this impure motive, and I think it's good that this day we allow God, and do it every day, to examine our hearts daily against greed and discontentment, so as not to let this consume us or destroy us. Lastly, God cares for those who may be accused falsely of sin and crime they didn't commit. Verse 15, "One witness is not enough to convict anyone accused of any crime or offense they may have committed. A matter must be established by the testimony of 2 or 3 witnesses. If a malicious witness takes a stand to accuse someone of a crime, the 2 people involved in the dispute must stand in the presence of the Lord before the priests and the judges who are in office at that time. The judges must make a thorough investigation, and if the witness proves to be a liar, giving false testimony against a fellow Israelite, then do to the false witness as that witness intended to do to the other party. You must push the evil from among you. The rest of the people will hear of this and be afraid, and never again will such an evil thing be done among you. Show no pity. Life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot." Whether it's killing or whether it's stealing, eventually you will be appearing before the court. The law here makes it very clear that an offender cannot be convicted, based on verse 15, on the testimony of a single witness. And other passages and parts of the Bible will tell us that the witnesses can only testify in a case based on what they actually seen with their own eyes or heard with their own ears. And then after all that, if you gave false testimony, whatever the offender was accused of, the false witness will also suffer the same punishment. So if it's a capital offense and the witness is found lying, the witness will die. This is an ancient law called lex talionis, which states that the punishment should fit the crime. Life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. Now, at one glance, it seems so cruel and brutal, or barbaric even. But in reality, lex talionis is not a law to ensure revenge, as it was a law to ensure restraint from too much revenge. You see, God knows this is us, our human nature. You took out one of my eyes, I can't see properly now, I'm going to take out both of your eyes. It is possible to overpunish a convicted person. Left to ourselves to punish, the punishment often exceeds the crime if we are the one personally delivering it, without the right law to restrain us. So lex talionis is given as a rule so that vengeance will not exceed what is fitting. And when we get to the New Testament, Jesus actually took a portion of this and say in Matthew chapter 5, verse 38, Jesus take this lex talionis principle in the context of personal revenge and sort of turns it around, showing to us the highest way to treat someone is not revenge, but forgiveness. You have heard that it was said, eye for eye and tooth for tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other cheek also. If anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them 2 miles. Give to the one who asks you and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. It is not vengeance, Jesus says, but forgiveness is the highest act. Jesus is essentially saying, be a refuge for people, just like the city of refuge. Don't immediately or impulsively react or respond to a perceived or even actual wrong and injury, but welcome that person in and be a refuge. We need to forgive those who hurt us for our own healing from the hurts they inflicted upon us. We have a choice. We can seek justice by inflicting the same pain on our offenders, or we can offer mercy. We can either punish or we can love. So we have looked at the city of refuge, the boundary markers and the witnesses, all with a single intention to protect the vulnerable and the innocent in our midst. Let's now try to sum it all up and see how this applies to us today. Firstly, this is what City of Refuge represent. It's a demonstration of God's mercy. And I want to start by saying this. The fact that the tribe of Levi even existed at all is a show of God's mercy. Let me bring us back to Genesis 34, when the father of the tribe of Levites, Levi and his brother Simeon, were around. So one person, one boy in the town, violated their sisters. They got so angry, and these two brothers gang up together, attack a city, and they mass murdered many of their males. So on his deathbed, the father Jacob got all their sons together, all the boys together, and he mentioned this to Levi in chapter 49, verse 7. Cursed be their anger, so fierce, and their fury, so cruel. I will scatter them in Jacob and disperse them in Israel. By the way of justice, they both and their lineage should die, totally eliminated. But rather, God shows them mercy. And what is mercy? They not getting what they deserve. Instead of being eradicated, they only get scattered. That's why they didn't get any land at all. And they only get cities. They are scattered all over Israel. But at the same time, God's mercy also has given them the priesthood. If you think about it, it's such an irony that the city of refuge were Levitical cities. The one who were tasked to judge murderers who flee there were once murderers themselves. So it's an irony, but it's also showing us the depth of God's mercy. And this is the wonderful truth about God through the principle of the cities of refuge, that He is indeed a God of second chances and seeks to redeem our wrongs and our mistakes that we have committed. First to the Levites, second to the murderers that flee there to find safety and refuge. And when we look into Scripture, it's filled with people who receive second chances, even third, fourth, fifth, another chance to live life aright before God again. Jonah, Samson, David, Peter, Mark, the Israelites that we have been reading through the Deuteronomy series, they all were given chance after chance. And it's still true today of who God is to each of us who has messed up in life. I have done wrong and make mistakes in life that I don't feel deserving of God's forgiveness and restoration. And it is true. Not deserving of it, but because our Lord, our God that is merciful and gracious, slow to anger, and abounding in love and faithfulness, He chooses to forgive, to restore, and if we will allow Him to do His work of refining and pruning us to be His handiwork, He will redeem our wrongs and turn them around for His glory. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is His faithfulness. The second application is that the city of refuge informs what I call the asylum principle. This passage has shown us that God wishes to have structures in society and by implication, the church to protect the vulnerable. At every generation, the church needs to discover who are the vulnerable in our midst. Who are the vulnerable that we need to protect and be committed to seeing them be treated justly with mercy and grace. While the particular emphasis in Deuteronomy 19 on those who are vulnerable to undeserved punishment is the teaching of this entire passage that lies behind the asylum principle that is common today. Asylum is the word used today for giving refuge and protection for people who are unfairly treated or exposed to danger. And throughout history, churches have been very open to welcoming and accepting people who flee from seeking asylum, from home, from seeking asylum and refuge. I remember when the crisis of refugees from Syria in 2011, because of all the huge conflict and the war that was happening there, millions of Syrians were displaced and they were seeking refuge elsewhere away from their home, mostly in their neighboring countries like Turkey and all that. But some had to flee, risk their life to flee to far off places like Europe. And it was at this time, many churches in Europe, for example, transformed into refugee camps to house the influx of refugees. And while the European churches and nations debated strict border in dealing with the influx of refugees, we hear of many churches and ecumenical organizations. One that I remember very clearly is the Lutheran World Federation. Every day, they will push out reports and send messages to churches and reminded Christians everywhere our duty to protect the vulnerable and welcoming in the strangers into our midst. And when they did that, the world saw that the church was playing what she was supposed to do, playing its vital role of becoming the city of refuge for the refugees who were displaced from their homes, needing safety and shelter. Today's is Charity Bazaar Day in support of World Refugee Week. You may ask, who and what exactly do we raise funds for? Why do we involve the church in this initiative? And are there other ways to show solidarity with the refugees? Can I have the next slide? Other than donating or raising financial support. Today, I'm going to introduce a sister who worships at one of the two congregations that your contributions would matter. In order to protect her identity, I cannot invite her to come on stage. So instead, I've asked Irene to read her story on behalf of Mary, who is also not her real name. So would you take some time to listen to her story?
Mary, and I'm a Myanmarese Christian. I'm 31 years old and currently am one of the many Myanmar refugees residing in Malaysia. I have been in Malaysia for a little over 2 years since I arrived here on the 10th of April, 2022. Many Malaysians ask me why I chose to come here. Why did I leave Myanmar in the first place? Everyone loves their home, country, and family. If I have a choice, I would love to continue being in Myanmar to study, work, or even start a family. But I had no choice but to flee my country or die being persecuted. Military coup, which started in February 2022 in particular, arrested, tortured, and killed those who are not for them. I happen to be one of the dissenters group who supported democracy and the NLD party under the leadership of Aung San Suu Kyi. One day, I participated in the protests of the military coup in a township called Tamu. It was there the army threw bombs in order to disperse the protesters. Some lost their lives instantly. Some, like myself, I lost my left leg. By the time the medic found me, I was half dead and bleeding profusely. By the grace of God, and with the help of the Kuki, one of Myanmar's tribes, the community leaders at the Tamu area, they quickly treated me and then smuggled me to Malaysia. As a refugee, my greatest fear is safety. I am no longer able to go back to my home country as it's not safe for me. However, I also don't feel totally safe over here in Malaysia. Most refugees will tell you that we are constantly living in fear of the authorities, such as the Immigration Department, that may deport us. And if that should happen, it may well be the end of our lives. I thank God that in my fear, I can look to Jesus for comfort. Jesus is my Redeemer, Protector, and Refuge. I am convinced that it's because of Him that I can still be alive and serving my community today. In spite of tragic and fearful situations, Jesus has shown me that He can be trusted to protect me from evil and to keep me from harm. Jesus has also provided for me through the church. As a refugee, I can hardly find work or survive with only one functioning leg and one prosthetic leg. But God has provided financial help through my community church. And on top of that, since last year, PJEFC has also supported me with a monthly allowance as I serve the refugee kids in my neighborhood and church. This provision really helps me a lot and has enabled me to know that God is looking after my needs. When Reverend Alexa asked me, "What does the church need to do more to welcome refugees in our midst? How can the church, like Jesus, be a refuge and safe space for the refugees?" I believe that the church has such an important role in dealing with people like us. You can help provide us with basic day-to-day needs, such as food, medical aid, rental of our place to stay, emotional and spiritual support too. I thank those brothers and sisters who remember us constantly in prayer and partner with us to organize the charity bazaar like today to raise funds to meet the needs of some of our poorer members. Some of you even go an extra mile to help us get a proper job so that we can make a living with our own hands. Above all, we desire to be embraced as men and women made in God's image and be welcomed, treated with respect and dignity, and be promised safety in this land many of us now call home. Thank you for the opportunity to share, and I hope you can stay back later to fellowship with us at the bazaar and support us in any way you can. God bless your generosity.
Thank you, Irene. Mary. So this is Mary's story, as vulnerable as it gets. Her life was in danger, and when she flees here, scared and wounded, didn't know who or where to turn to, the church welcomed her and sheltered her from danger. Is PJFC a city of refuge for the vulnerable? How can our church and churches everywhere be a place of refuge or sanctuary that models the city of refuge of Deuteronomy 19? Lastly, the city of refuge is prophetic as well, as in they point to the future of the ultimate refuge, the Lord Jesus Christ. Earlier, I mentioned that when a criminal flees to a city of refuge for a fair trial, he will be protected while the high priest is still alive. He was safe by the life of the high priest. And when the high priest dies, he's acquitted and could go home. It was as if his sin were atoned for by the high priest's death. Jesus in the New Testament is called our great high priest, our final high priest, our ultimate high priest. Although he could have avenged us for our sins, he didn't. But instead, this avenger became the redeemer. The avenger, Goel, became the one who set us free and took the punishment upon himself. And that's what we remember each time when we gather and worship, when we look at the cross, or when we partake of the Holy Communion, the Lord's table. So when we look at the City of Refuge today, it represents and is absolutely the picture of Jesus. Because just like the City of Refuge, which is open to everyone, Israelites and foreigners alike, Jesus is for everyone who will flee to him. And when we run to him, we can find safety and protection. He will not turn us away because our Jesus, for Jesus, no one is beyond redemption. And this calls for those of us who follow Jesus, like the Levites, must be willing and ready to surround the guilty, the sinners that enter into our midst, knowing that their sin too can be forgiven, just as ours was, because the death of the great high priest is sufficient to do so. So I invite the church to make room for people to take shelter and to hide in Jesus. My last question to the church this morning is, are you in need of a refuge today? A refuge from the dangers of life, from the enemies within and without, from concerns, fears, from uncertainties of your future, from our own restlessness that rob us from truly living the life the way it's meant to be. If you are going through all this, I would like to invite you to turn toward Jesus. Some of us may have been seeking out false refuges all this while, relying on ourselves to try to solve or escape from our life's problems, depending on our own wisdom, our own strength to overcome our mistakes and our sins. And then we feel defeated because we are nowhere near the peace and rest and protection that we so seek. Can I ask us to think this statement that I was thinking through last night? Since we cannot run from God, why not run to God? Since we cannot hide from God, why not hide in God? For in him, we will find mercy and rest from trying to do it in our own strength. May this song minister to your heart as it does mine. And may you allow the Lord to nudge your spirit to go to him, the only refuge that can ever make you feel truly secure and truly feel at home. If you need prayer as a song is being sung, I welcome you to come out. The leaders will be there to pray for you. If not, just listen to it, be ministered, and wherever you are, allow the Lord to touch your heart again.
You have been listening to a sermon from PJEFC. We hope you have been blessed by the message. For more sermons, please go to www.pjefc.org/sermons. Love God, love people, make disciples.